So, junior sous chef walks in almost 10 o'clock. The shift starts. And he comes in and like says, "Gerard, what are you doing?" He sees me running around like a headless chicken. "So, why are you running around like a headless chicken for, you stupid idiot?" Then instead of scolding me, "Can you come and help me? Because I'm totally in the shit currently." So he helped me a little bit. And after that, again, get slammed. "What are you doing? Why didn't you do this properly? Why didn't you do that? I want it much better next time." So it's a wake up call. Get better or get out.
Hey, Simis. Welcome to episode 144 of the So This Mawai podcast. I'm your host and producer, Lingya. And today's guest is Gerald Di Maria. Now, Gerald has recently taken over the Italian culinary world on Instagram by storm, including with his series on the best pastas to buy in supermarkets. So much so that some of his videos have hit 7.3 million views per video, and most of them are averaging 200,000 impressions and counting. Now, with a following that is over 240,000 strong on Instagram, he's been getting involved in a ton of collaborations, including with Cold Storage Singapore. So I reached out and I said, "Well, tell me about how building a personal brand, being so active on social media, is having an impact on your business, which is to run an Italian halal food restaurant in Singapore, Cucina." Who actually is Gerald? What was it like growing up in London, going into the culinary world? What is his advice for other chefs, especially those who want to get into content creation game? And what are his plans moving forward? Now, are you more excited to learn about how Gerald has done what he's done? Are you ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the So This Is My Why podcast, where we talk to people about their whys and how they turn them into realities to inspire you to live your best life. And here's your host, Ling Ya.
I have to say, I first came across you because of my mom. And she basically sent me this Instagram reel. And I read it and I thought, oh my goodness, you know, he's talking about the kind of pastas we should be having. And I've been growing up eating San Remo the whole time. And I didn't realize it was a rubbish pasta. So I went ahead, my mom and I, and then we bought all the pasta that you were recommending. And we also got the barilla as well. Unfortunately, we couldn't find anything else.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So definitely going to try. But obviously, this is the kind of impact that content has. If it reaches and it resonates with people, then we go, oh my gosh, we need to look into it. We need to do something, or we need to buy. Yes. And then for me, because I ran a podcast as well, I thought, okay, who is this person? I would love to know where this guy popped up from.
Yeah.
And I learned that you ran Singapore's Hello Italian restaurant. But before that, you actually came from London. You grew up there.
Yes.
But your family is from Sicily.
That's right.
I wonder if you can give us a little idea of who were you like as a child? What was it like growing up in London?
I was very shy. Completely different to what I am now that you see me on social media. Yeah, even 5 years ago, 4 years ago, I wouldn't be the same person as I am now. That cook, obviously, it comes through with confidence. But I was a shy boy. Yes, you can ask my mother. I was totally different from what I am now.
How did that change though? Did it change when you were a kid or is it much later?
I think it changed much later when I had much more experience. And when you go through life and have your ups and downs, and it's the confidence. It's definitely the confidence that you bring forward. And the more knowledge, it's all about knowledge. Knowledge is power. So the more that you know, then you're more comfortable about speaking about things. And then you just not fazed by anything that should come in on a negativity base. So growing up in UK, a very good, close family, mum and dad, a very normal lifestyle, you know.
Italian. I heard that you order your tomatoes and grapes from Sicily to make your own food.
Yes. My father was very traditional in that way. So he instilled in us from a very young age. I mean, because I had growing up in a house with me as well, my grandparents. So that's why I spoke Italian from a very young age. Everything's homemade. There's nothing that is purchased. Basically, how I run the restaurant now, we make everything from scratch. Even the bread is made from scratch. So I think that I brought that into the restaurant from when I was young. So everything that you instill in your kids will make them growing up into an adult, especially when it comes to food. So, cooking of tomatoes. My father used to make wine, you know, so I used to make that with him when I was very young. So all of these basic skills, it was a chore at that time. You were just like, oh, dad wants us to do this, dad wants us to do that. But at that time, yes, you're just like nagging and we have to do it because we're forced to do it. But afterwards, you appreciate it. You realize that, oh, he taught us a lot of things, everything to do around the house, fixing things in the house as well.
I wonder, what were some of the classical dishes that you always have to have?
The tomato-based pasta, I would have it at least 4 times a week. Mom would just put what we would call salsa. We just call it salsa in Italian, which is the basic tomato sauce with basil and garlic. That's the most traditional. So growing up with the smells in the house of always tomato, always having good coffee, espresso. Yeah.
Cacio e pepe was something I noticed everywhere in Italy.
Yes, cacio pepe. We didn't have that much because we are from Sicily. So it's different because cacio pepe is from Rome. So
yes, that's what I was at.
Yeah, so it's different. Mom would actually do like butter and cheese, which is basically the same thing, but we just have parmesan cheese with the butter. Okay, which you nowadays they call it Alfredo.
Yes.
Alfredo is another thing, but that's a very basic food for us. And of course, aglio. What do Italians eat every day? Very basic food. We do not have our truffle pastas or cream sauces, all of those things that people perceive us to eat every day, but that's not our daily food. It really
And that's why you're not fat. That's why you did the video on this.
Healthily, we have a lot of good olive oil. Mm. Pasta, of course, is to a certain standard. Of course, Nonna used to make a pasta as well. So it's very different. We always have homemade food every single day. And then we have either meat or fish, you know, we have salads. We always have bread. I'm a lover for bread. I'm a sucker for bread. I cannot see a good loaf of bread and not purchase it. If I see a nice rustic loaf, I just have to buy it because I adore bread. Bread and pasta is my go-tos. So something that are very natural and basic, but actually are wonderful to eat. I think that's what I'm trying to get across to the people outside now to eat healthily and bring it back down to the basics.
Something that you said before we started, which resonated with me, was that you said when you came to this part of the world, you noticed that people here don't really know what we are buying from supermarkets the way that you would understand food back home in the UK. Yeah. I wonder what were some of the things that stood out for you when you came here. You go, these are some of the things that you should be thinking about when you're buying food. But people here clearly weren't taught to think about.
Yes, I think that's quite a lot. In England, it's the same. And I think in some parts of Europe, but mainland Europe, they know what they're purchasing. We understand food differently. In Asia, obviously, you've never been taught, you know, what pastas are good, what should we be eating, vegetables, European vegetables are different to local vegetables in Asia, so they don't know quite what to do with the vegetable themselves.
So what should we be eating?
Natural. Like when I did the butter video, I did that butter video just like on the spur of the moment. I said, tell you what, let's talk about butter and just tell them this is what I buy when I really want something good, which was the Ashe butter. And it just went ballistic. Everybody went to go and buy the most expensive butter. You're buying a $12 butter, do you know that? So it's not about the price always, but you need to understand the quality of what you're actually purchasing. If you're getting something on a lower grade, cheaper, it has, not say different additives in it, but it's made differently, it's made inferior. When you understand that and when you eat it, then you feel like, oh yeah, that's different. Why does that taste different? Because it doesn't have those impurities that butter had. You're getting pure butter. So you understand, oh, this is what real butter tastes like. Yes. Why do we not cook with margarine? Because margarine is just full of other oils. They loosen the butters down, and that's why it's spreadable. But you can't get a butter to be that soft unless you put monosaturated and different oils. That's why a chef would never cook with margarine, because the sauce would just totally screw up. And then with the pasta, the same thing. Why was everybody going to San Remo? I didn't understand that. And literally everyone that stops me in the street or comes to the restaurant tells me that they have changed brands. Everyone. They do not purchase anymore San Remo. So I said, it's not that I'm against the brand. I'm not against anyone. But I'm just telling you that why are you purchasing something that is a $2 plus pasta? And you can go to La Molisana, Barilla, De Cecco. You're increasing it by $1. $1, $1.50, $2. You want to go to the top ones, you're maybe tripling it. But does it not resonate that there's a reason for that price to be at that point. That one, I blew my mind. That I didn't understand why you were going for the cheaper pasta. You were not realizing how can that be cheap and good and the other ones are more expensive. I didn't understand that. Some of them do that to me and they said, Chef, we just look at the whole pasta shelf and just pick the cheapest one. So I was like, okay, so how is that good quality? Explain to me your rationalism on that. So they said, yeah, we just thought that the darker pasta was good. I said, no, other way around. It has to be light. So I believe that's why the video went so viral.
Yeah.
Because it made them understand and like maybe a light bulb went off in their head and like, oh, okay, we need to buy that pasta now. So I think that really does change in the way that you understand food. Going back to when I was growing up, we just knew what is good food automatically because everything is home cooked.
And fresh, imported. And fresh
to a certain extent, to a certain degree, we understood that, oh, we have to have this coffee. This brand is good. So it's instilled in me when I was very, very young. Even my mom told me the other day, she said, Jared, do you remember that when Nonna was still alive, my grandmother, said we used to purchase La Molisana? I said, really? I don't remember. I mean, I was so young, talking about 4 or 5 years old, 6 years old. I said, no, I don't remember. She said, yeah, but the packaging was slightly different to what it was. In England, we used to have an Italian man who comes around in his van to bring real Italian produce to the Italian households in England. So that is something which is very different to anything that you would have in Asia, right? We cannot just go and buy this food. They need to eat even the vegetables, the tomatoes, the eggplants, the basilico, even the garlic, to the point we are regarding food. There used to be an Italian shop around the area. It'll be somebody's house, in fact, that they've converted the downstairs area into a store. And they'd have all the Italian products that no supermarket carries. Okay. So we would go there get once a month, stock up on all the pastas and the tomatoes and everything. And then bring up. We used to have another guy who come in a van. You go inside the van, you go and take what you want and you pay him. So growing up is very different in an Italian family. I can say that food is our culture. It's our grounding. It's what we are, who we are. And being Sicilian as well, big family, always eating together on big occasions. So it's always regarding around food. We're always around the table. We always eat too much, but we eat good. I can't replicate that, but I tried to replicate that in a restaurant where that's why I made it halal as well, that every culture and every religion can come and dine at the table and enjoy. So that was why I wanted to open a restaurant. That's what's happening now. So at least I can bring that from the family point of view and I can bring it into the restaurant. And, you know, it resonates with people. I get a bit emotional about it because it actually happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm very happy about that.
Was this something that your family was surprised by when you entered into the food industry?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know what I wanted to do when, you know, I was in school. I was not academically great. I'm not great at exams, all that kind of things, but I was good with my hands. I was good at producing things. And then just when I went to culinary college after that, studied for 2 years. Then I hit the ground running and just went into a good restaurant and just started working hard.
Was it different though? Because you went to Red Hill Culinary College and you specialized in Italian cuisine, but you grew up cooking Italian food. Did you learn new things? Was it different?
Going to culinary school was just getting the basics. Culinary schools are always based on French cuisine. They're always based on French basics. So all the terminology, you know, all the sauces are French-based. So that was getting my basics right. And then going into the restaurants itself. I did work as a Saturday job even before I started college. I used to work with my father. He was a hairdresser. So I used to work with my father on a Saturday morning, go in at 9 o'clock, finish with him at 5 o'clock, go home, have dinner, drive me to the restaurant at 6 o'clock, and I would do 6 until 11 o'clock. That was my Saturday.
That's more than a typical working day.
Like I said, my father instilled in me hard work and to earn your money. Nothing comes for free. So I knew the value of money as well.
The F&B industry is not easy and doesn't pay that much. I mean, I worked a bit as well in London. I didn't have an experience, so they didn't even make me a waitress. I was a runner. I was just shocked by how much work was involved, just the carrying of plates, the heat, the hours, so many things involved that I never appreciated when I was just a patron.
Yeah.
And it's not like you earn that much either.
No, you don't. But again, at the beginning, it wasn't about the money anyway. I mean, I didn't care how much I was being paid. I was still living at home with my parents. I had a comfortable life, middle class family, you know, we were okay, well to do. So it wasn't really about the money for me. It was just about learning the skills and getting the best. My father even told me when I started, he said, look, if you want to go to Paris, I'll put you in a Michelin star restaurant. You know, it doesn't matter. I'll pay for you. I said, Dad, I'm not that good. I told him that. I said, no, I'm not that good. I don't want to go into a Michelin star restaurant at such a young age. Yeah, so you can see from there that I didn't have the confidence at that time. Yeah, I was shy, 17, yeah. 18 years old, just going into my first full-time job. Yeah.
You often say to your young chefs that your first job will set the bar. And true. It sounds like your first big job really set the bar. What kind of standards did it instill in you that you've carried on?
Discipline. My head chef was Scottish, so very strict. We will bring in like half a cow from Scotland. You know, he'll bring in Aberdeen beef, that kind of thing. So we will butcher ourselves, half a cow. Fish, same thing, salmon from Scotland and all that kind of thing. So I learned a lot of basic skills that some chefs nowadays skip. They skip over butchery, they skip over fishery, you know, owning fish and all that kind of things. It's a skill in itself. So I was lucky that I had him next to me and he took me right under his wing. I was just working side by side with him. His chopping board was next to me and I had my chopping board here. So everything that he did directly, I was involved. The others didn't have that. He just took me in on the first day. The junior sous chefs and the CDPs didn't have that under him. And he was very strict with the others as well. I don't know why he saw in me that he wanted to teach me himself. Yeah, I think he may have seen something in me. Obviously, I was too young or too naive to know at that time.
And you had hard lessons as well, right? That English breakfast shift.
Yeah, the English breakfast shift coming in middle of winter in the UK. 5:30 in the morning, get in the car, go to work. Hard days, hard days. So get into the kitchen, switch on everything to make it hot in the first place because you're freezing. Check off all the vegetable list, which is outside in two huge crates that come in the morning. Sign all of that or get it inside, do all your things and start your prep. And then breakfast shift starts and then you don't know how busy you're going to be. Well, we knew how many people are in the rooms, but you don't know whether they're all coming down for breakfast. So one day I got totally slammed. Young 17-year-old boy got slammed with breakfast shift. I was losing it at that point because I had such a busy breakfast shift before. I had omelets, I had scrambled eggs, I had full English breakfast and all different things going all at the same time. I didn't know how to manage it. I didn't know how to manage my time. I didn't know which one to cook first, which one to cook later kind of thing. So junior sous chef walks in almost 10 o'clock. The shift starts and he comes in and like, he says, Jared, what are you doing? He sees me running around like a headless chicken. So, what are you running around like a headless chicken for, you stupid idiot? Then instead of scolding me, can you come and help me? Because I'm totally in the shit currently. So he helped me a little bit. And after that, again, get slammed. What are you doing? Why didn't you do this properly? Why didn't you do that? I want it much better next time. So it's a wake-up call. Get better or get out.
But those are the trial by fires that really tell you whether this is for you or not, isn't it?
Yeah. It's very true. You need to go through this as a chef. You need to go through that to understand that you can do it or not. Some boys nowadays, some of my staff, they screw up. They do a bad shift. I tell them, okay, now dust yourself off. Now I'm going to tell you where you went wrong. And now tomorrow you start again. Don't do it again. Do it a second at a time. Bye-bye. Because you're not up to it. You can tell straight away if someone's up to it, if they're not up to it. So if you can raise up the bar again and go again and do it better, then okay, now you got it. Yeah.
So were you clear from the start? Yes, I am cut out for this.
Took time, but things happened along the way that, oh, maybe I'm better than this person. Like I was cooking pasta and on the vegetable section, I was still a commis chef. The head chef told the CDP, Jero cooks better than you on the pasta. So he like came to me and said, how do you do it? I said, well, I just did it like how chef taught me how to do it. That's all. What are you doing wrong? So, sometimes you have natural skill for it, I think, that will come through without you even thinking about it. Obviously, that's why chef saw something in me. And that's why he always told me that, you know, you have it.
How do you cook the perfect pasta now that you say it?
We only had two pastas on the menu at that point. It was more to a French fine dining restaurant and he had one or two pastas. It was just a pink sauce with salmon. In fact, it's one of my signature sauces that I have in Cucina now. But it's just a very simple sauce. You can't really get it wrong, but obviously if you put too much tomato, you don't get the ratio of cream to tomato correct. It can be a bit too sour, can be a bit too sharp with fresh basil inside, with salmon. And again, it's about consistency. It's difficult to have vegetable section in a hotel. It's one of the worst sections you can be in. Larder, which is the core section, and the vegetable, there's so much work. It's like nonstop.
Yeah. And I noticed that you have worked at many, many different places. You worked at five-star hotel. Then you decided, no, I don't want this. I'm going to go to a golf club. What is it like working in such different places? And you haven't even moved to Singapore yet.
Yeah, very different environments. I just knew that hotel life wasn't for me. Progression is very, very slow in a hotel. Restaurants is much faster because you're working usually directly with the chef or even a sous chef very close. So you go up in the restaurant faster and you learn more. The ladder is faster to climb. Whereas in a hotel, you may stay in a position for maybe 2 years. And you don't have a salary increment. Call me one, call me two, call me three. Then you're demi chef. It's like so long. It takes forever. And I just knew that that line wasn't really for me. It was all buffet work. I was a commis chef, but I was in charge of the section. So I should have been CDP, actually. But you do all of the buffet work. You do all the call for the club rooms. You do sandwiches. So it's a nightmare when, let's say, for example, you're preparing for a buffet and a club sandwich comes on order. Now I have to make a club sandwich while I'm doing buffet work. No, it's just ridiculous. Like, you hate doing it. And then I was approached by a golf club. I started there, totally different because it's members, right? So the members will actually like own you. I don't like to be talked to about things that you have to do. So I didn't take to that also very, very well because they dictate to you what you need to do, right? I was like, okay, I don't really like this because I like to be a bit more free-spirited. So again, a bit regimental, but it's a learning curve. It's good as well. You do buffet work at the same time as doing a la carte. You do special night menus and that kind of thing. But it's still good. Yeah, it's still enjoyment. At the end of the day, every place that you work, you learn the good and the bad.
Yeah. And I imagine one of your biggest learnings is when you decide to move to Singapore. And just before that, you were 21. You had a three-month holiday in Singapore. You liked it so much, you decided to settle on the other side of the world. What was that thought process?
I came here. Very different, didn't even know Asia, didn't even know where Singapore was or even what it looked like. Big contrast to living in Europe. It's warm all the time, year round. And I think that's why Europeans, you like it. We always run away from the cold in the winter times. And I decided to try and find a job at the end of it. And I got my first job.
But why Singapore though?
I'd always known that I wouldn't stay in England forever. Initially, I thought I may go to Italy, in fact.
Yeah, why not?
But then I had this holiday here and then I just like, okay, let me try it out. So I tried it and then liked it. And then that's where it stayed. And I stayed here. Yeah.
Do you mind the relentless pace? I mean, if you move to Italy, I remember going to Italy, the siesta is so long. Yes. Things are closed 2 or 3 hours in the middle of the day.
Correct. Very different lifestyle. Very different lifestyle compared to Singapore. I've said it before, that it's too fast. It's actually from the moment you're born until you rest. It's just nonstop. Too fast, a bit too fast, I believe, for the children, especially growing up. Always next step, you know, from primary school, secondary school. And the work-wise, it's the same thing as well. Always have to be on top of your game. If not, you are yesterday's news. Yeah, I'm just used to that now. But sometimes you do need to have a break. It's nice to go to Italy and see a different pace in life. Enjoy the life more because here it's just relentless. But now I settled down here, so can't complain too much.
Your first job actually was at Pasta Fresca in 1996, which I just popped into last year. I wonder, back in 1996, what was that like?
Good. We had a lot of Italians. So I was the Italian chef at Bocchi. There was Italian managers. There was like two or three Italian managers. So it was run by Italians at in 96, 97. I don't know whether now it's the same. And the service. The restaurant was very, very busy. You know, Bocchi was 24 hours, three levels. It was nonstop. I have a team of, I think, about 10 chefs at that time, different shifts. Shocker when I started work because culture difference, the way I used to speak with a very British accent. I didn't understand the word I'm talking about.
You've lost it now.
Yeah, I lost my British accent due to that, I think. Because I had Chinese, mainland China. I had Malays, obviously, Sri Lankans. So very diverse. English levels are all different for everyone. So yeah, my accent changed. But I will only speak proper English when I speak to my mother again, and I'll go back to my original.
Working at different restaurants is so different from running your own restaurant. And it was, yeah, I believe, a unique concept back then, because it's a halal Italian restaurant.
And authentic at its core, yes.
Yeah, authentic. What is an authentic halal restaurant, though?
I want to not make any of the food fusion. I wanted it to be Italian at the core and authentic in the technique that we cook and ingredients. Obviously, I had to remove pork and alcohol, which, to be honest, is a small part of Italian cuisine. Cooking with wines and all that kind of thing can be switched up. Obviously, pork, yes, we have our salamis, our prosciutto, parmesan, crudo and cotto. Yes, obviously, pancetta for the carbonara. The technique of cooking is the same. I'm not changing that technique. So when I make a classic carbonara, I say technically it's a classic carbonara. I don't use the guanciale. I use a beef guanciale, but the rest is the same. So I didn't want to change the flavors at all. I eat the food, meaning that it's Italian at the core. That was my priority on the food. I did not want to change it because I had seen a lot of Italian restaurants, whether fast food, halal, not halal, changing and not being really Italian at the core. What I wanted to share and explain what is Italian food to the local Malay Muslim community. So that was very, very important. And that's what I did. Over the last 8 years, people understood what cucina stands for, the quality, and that you're getting Italian food. No, you're not going to come to me and ask me to make a chili crab pasta or a nasi lemak something on the pizza. Not happening. I'm not going to do it. So don't even bother asking me. So that was the reason why I did the restaurant.
Hey, Simis, if you haven't done so already, please do head over to give a rating and review for this podcast, because without it, Apple Podcasts, Spotify would never push it forward to let anyone else see. So just head over, share with people, that people will know about this special series, especially the ones that we are showcasing right now on Singaporeans who have achieved incredible success.
Yeah, but ultimately, apart from just the food and ensuring it's authentic, when you're running it, you own it. It is a business and it's such a different world, right? And I just released an episode with Li Peng, who runs Undersea Collection. They have like 9 Michelin star restaurants, Zen, Cloud Street, Burnt Ends, Margarita. One of the first things that he talks about with chefs and which shocked them was the P&L. Very, very important. You need to stay on top. If you can't stay on top of your numbers, you have no business and no restaurant. True. I wonder for you, what is the reality of running and owning a restaurant that most people wouldn't see and know about?
That's why a lot of times they say chefs can only be chefs, they cannot run a business. Look, many chefs open restaurants and close down, right? Our mindset is always about the food. We don't have to think about the numbers because someone else is thinking about the numbers, right? Someone else is running it. We're just making sure our food cost is okay and the restaurant's making money. The chef says, okay, that, I'm okay with it. I don't need to know any more than that. But when you actually run a business, you need to know everything. So that was a learning curve for me, obviously. I had been the executive chef prior to that, so I knew P&L, I understood numbers well. But when it's your own baby, then of course you have to take all of the stress and make sure that you're doing the food that you want to do. At the same time, you need to make money, because if not, you don't have a business. But I was always very good at food cost, knowing my margins and all of those kind of things. But then the rest of it comes in: marketing, financials, paying the suppliers, doing HR. You can't afford to have someone to do that for you, so you have to do everything yourself. So it's all the back end of running the restaurant, not only the front that you see producing the food, but everything else that comes into it at the same time. Employing a dishwasher, which is impossible to find. You yourself for the first 6 months. I didn't have an off day for the first 6 months. I didn't even have a break. It was just constant. I knew that getting into it, and I knew that there wouldn't be a break. When you own something and you put in the money, there is no fallback. Either you go under and you're finished. So people don't understand the stress that goes into actually opening a restaurant. If you were to do it now, it costs even more than when I did it 8 years ago. We did the renovation and it cost a bomb. I wasn't in it because of the money. That wasn't my drive. My drive is what I said in setting up a halal Italian restaurant. That was my drive. The money is secondary because you need the money to run the business. but I'm not driven to make money to become rich. There's two different aspects of running a business. The other one will come by itself, but the first one doesn't come unless you put everything into it, 110%, and sometimes even more. So when you own something, the buck stops with you. There is no going back to someone else and asking, can we get some more money? It's not going to come from anywhere. The bank's not going to give you anything because they don't have any trust in you. So you have to make sure it works, which I knew in the back of my mind that I can cook and I know what I'm doing. I wasn't scared or apprehensive of doing it because I knew so many Italian restaurants in Singapore. Been to them. Honestly, half of them I knew could make it. They are not good Italian restaurants, but yet they're still running very well and they're busy. So I was like, if he can do it, and I know that I can cook better than him, of course I can do it. That was my philosophy at that point. We were in Kinex Mall, you know, at the basement. I didn't do any marketing for 2 years. Didn't have marketing budget. Just word of mouth, which is how an original Italian restaurant in Italy or in England would run. It starts slower, but the basis is stronger because it's word of mouth. So you would go to your friend and say, hey, you know, you should go to the restaurant because it's really, really good. So a recommendation through word of mouth is actually stronger than doing any marketing online where anything can be put out there. You can pay for things and you don't know whether it's good or not. You just go and try, hit and miss. It's good, it's good. It's not, you don't come back. It's kind of a two-edged sword to do that kind of way, but it worked because I make sure that the food was on point. And I was literally cooking almost every dish. I was making sure that everything was perfect. If anything wasn't perfect, then I was screaming. And it was an open kitchen. So my wife was like, can you not shout in the kitchen because it's open? I was like, yeah, but I'm so stressed. Yeah, it's very, very important to get the food out perfect.
What changed after the second year when you decided that, okay, I will put in some marketing effort, but still not spend on it?
Yeah, I mean, we just tried different marketing companies at that point. They were doing Facebook ads, total waste of money, looking back on it. But you didn't know, right? So you need to test the market. You need to understand, oh, maybe what he's saying is true. Let's try it out. You know, pay him $3,000 to do ads and stuff like that. And then give him a $500 budget for Facebook ads and stuff. To be honest with you, I never saw the money come back from Facebook ads. I did it for a while and then I stopped it. But we have to try because other restaurants are opening. People are trying to compete with you. So you need to get your voice out there. TikTok hadn't started at that point. So the only thing was Facebook and Instagram. Instagram at that point was different to what it is now, today. So hit and miss, really. Try different marketing companies. Try one, doesn't work, try another one. But at the end of the day, they were all doing pretty much 90% the same thing. And I just stopped altogether. I didn't bother doing anymore. In fact, I just did pop-up events on the weekends, these three-day events all over Singapore, like maybe Expo and then do an MBS, just to do different pastas, just trying to get the name out there, do marketing in that way. Very tiring, long hours, nonstop, doing 500 portions of pasta in 2 days using the cheese wheel pasta. Until today, my back, it still reminds me of those 2018. My back tells me, Jero, you did that in 2018. Now your back is still hurting. Yeah, I know. So just slogging it out really a lot in the early days, nonstop, relentless. That's the only way.
And at what point did you see the change, the turning point?
In fact, it was COVID. COVID was a blessing in disguise. Yeah. During it, nightmare. Trying to run the restaurant, going through COVID. I don't do that again. But on the flip side, when we came out of COVID, the business tripled.
Why do you think that's the case?
A few things came together. I had two ladies that came. One was a chef. She put out some content and she was quite big on IG, I think it was at that point, a well-known Malay chef. And one of the Malay artists as well came and said that the food was very good. So I think that had a knock-on effect. And at the same time, we were just coming out of COVID. So people were having that spending power, you see. I didn't start TikTok until 2022. So that at that point, it wasn't there. And then we just started getting popular early 2021. Yeah, just post-COVID. Restaurants just started getting busy and busy and busy. And then yeah, it was just booming. Full all the time. Weekends, I had to do double sitting. 6 o'clock and then 8 o'clock, two rounds, because the restaurant was only a 60-seater at that time. And the numbers just boomed. Things really, really changed after that. Then TikTok started. And it just rolled.
What was the strategy that you had for your content that you're putting out? I imagine it must evolve over time. And it's kind of the eternal struggle, right, of any entrepreneur. It's very much a I know I need to put myself out there, but if I put myself out there, that takes time away from the business. So how do I find the balance when I can't find the immediate ROI from it?
Right. Initially, Sam came to me, my brand talk. I'd known him prior because he had done my menu design. Okay. So I knew him from branding. We did a new menu from him and a few little things. And he said, "Sure, do you want to just try TikTok?" I was on the fence at that time. I had just opened my own TikTok account, but wasn't really using it. I was with another marketing lady at that time. And I said, "Yeah, but I don't know how to do the editing. I need someone to do it for me. I don't have the time for all of these things." So Sam said, "Okay, just try it out for 1 or 2 months, see how it goes." I said, "Okay." So we did the first video, where it was a special pizza, and it got a lot of views, and people were coming in immediately. The day it went out in the afternoon, people were coming in at night. And asking me, "I want this pizza with the burrata." I said, "Well, first time I've seen something actually work. Facebook was just dead. I can put out a video and I see the return in the evening." So that was good. We did that a few times. And I said to him, "If I'm going to do TikTok, I want to teach." And that was kind of my whole objective of Cucina, to teach from day one regarding Italian food. So if I'm going to do TikTok, then I will want to teach and show them how to cook good meals for the family. So he said, "Okay, let's do that." And I said, "Okay, let's start with some basic pastas and see how they go." Then the video went viral, over 2 million views. So from there, I knew that they wanted to learn. Then a light bulb went, "Okay, now I know what they want. They want to learn how to cook properly." It went from there.
And did you find yourself going down this rabbit hole of, "I wonder what else people are teaching out there that people really like"?
Yes, I've seen some content as well online. People are teaching the same kind of things that I was doing, but obviously the way that I came across, they liked it. They said that they liked the way I teach. They like my voice. They like my accent. So it reminiscent with them and it just picked up from there. I never expected to have so many followers that what I have now. Suddenly I had 10, 20,000 followers and then it shot up. It shot up to 60 and then it just kept on going up. And then it plateaued. We just kept losing views. It really evolved. And then I did the supermarket videos. I said, "Let's go to a supermarket and see what good, bad pastas, all the rest of the things." Never expected it to do like 9-10 million views.
And like, that's true virality.
Yes, that is real virality. Yes. I saw that you posted about me on LinkedIn. So I replied to you. I've gone into LinkedIn for so many months. And I just went inside and I saw that you posted that about me. I was like, "Wow, okay, even you picked it up." So big, very big. And then obviously from there, like as of now, my life has changed.
I wonder, because I love that you said life has changed, because normally people look at it and go, "Well, I just want to run my business. I don't want to be an influencer." What does it actually mean to have so many numbers, really? Right. Yeah. And I wonder, what do you mean by your life has changed? What does that look like?
Well, I have a lot of companies now coming to me to do collaborations. As you know, I have CS Fresh, but I have another two that I haven't mentioned yet. It's La Molisana, the pasta, and also Solis, which is a Swiss manufacturing company, which I currently have now coffee machines and vacuum pack machines all around me.
You did an acting debut as well.
I did my acting debut late last year in a drama. Yep, I had that as well. So going viral helps a lot. The business is very, very busy. Life changed. So yes, many companies have approached me to do collaborations and the restaurant business has seen a growth as well. Everyone's coming to see me. They want to take pictures with me all the time and they expect me to be around there every single day. But unfortunately, I'm not around every day. So, "Oh, we came to see Chef," but I have to explain to them the team is running the restaurant now. I have a very strong team. That's why I can do what I do now, because I have a strong team. Prior to that, years ago, the team wasn't what it is now. I have a very good manager. I have a very good team in the kitchen, very good chef, my sous chefs. They can run. They've been taught by me to cook, especially my chef. He's very good with Italian background. My pastry chef as well. So all of that is now taken care of. I am free to do other things regarding the business. Now, of course, I'm the face. I always have been the face, but now I'm more prominent. And it brings business. I can see it. And my face will be in CS Fresh very soon, in 2 weeks' time. They're doing all of the media things now. So naturally, I believe that will also pick up even more, because more people recognize me. So I have to be careful. naturally. When I'm outside, the way I talk to people, the way I approach people, you know, I have to be very personified.
I wonder, when you talk about these collaborations, what's going through your mind? Because you can't accept every single offer that comes to you. How do you decide what to say yes to, what not to say yes to?
It has to resonate with me regarding the branding. Obviously, CS Fresh is on par with what Cucina is. They are all about fresh food, same as me. And then I can talk about how we cook in a restaurant and how I cook at home. And it can resonate because I can get the produce from there. Same with the pasta, the tomatoes. That's the reason why I went to CS to do the first video, because I knew that they have all of the brands that I need to talk about.
I thought that was the perfect collaboration, because that's how you went really, really viral. And now you can go in and you don't have to pay for it.
Yeah. Now I was like, I have the whole supermarket to myself.
Let me try everything that you're bringing in.
Yeah. And they could see, obviously, the sales of the pasta went up, or they saw a change from one brand to the other brand, which was moving. So that power that I have now, I didn't expect that to be so strong. So I think they trust me. They know what I talk about is the truth. I'm no nonsense kind of person. I tell you what is good, what is bad. And then when they try it, it's verified. And they can taste the difference. With my other collaborations, obviously with La Molisana, the pasta is very good. And I naturally just told them, and they want me to be the ambassador. And then again, with these machines that I have now with the Solis, is the vacuum pack, because this will be a game changer for people at home. We use vacuum pack machines in the restaurant because we produce a lot of food and it will prolong the shelf life of the food in the fridge. But at home, not many people have a vacuum pack machine. So I can showcase to them the cost is not high for what you're getting, because it's going to prolong the food in your fridge. You're not throwing away food, the wastage also. And then you can also sous vide with the vacuum pack, and you can marinate food. So it has a lot of different aspects. That's why I decided to go with them as well. They're a reputable company since 1902. Doing collaborations is a thoughtful process. I will not go, obviously, with a brand. It's not good for the Cucina, especially.
Speaking of yourself and Cucina, I wonder, have you thought about the fact that not obviously people recognize you, you are the face of your restaurant, but at the same time, the restaurant also needs to stand by itself. I mean, if people come to see you, but you can't be there all the time, so you also don't want to disappoint. How do you think about, do you even want to separate those two identities, the restaurant and you?
Like I said, I do have a very good restaurant manager who gives very, very good high quality service. I've explained to them that you guys are now an extension of me. You need to understand what's happening online, because all the new people that's coming through the doors, to them is their first experience coming into Cucina. So you have to nail every single day, because the expectations of my clientele now, I set the bar very high. So I need to deliver. If not, it's my face. Like all big celebrity chefs that open so many restaurants, the downfall is that then you can't have the quality in all of them, which I don't want. I will keep Cucina unique. I just want to keep the one. I'm not into opening so many restaurants. It's very, very difficult to maintain quality. Like I said, the kitchen team and the service is very, very important. It's not a one-man show. So for me, I want to put my content out there that people can resonate with it, understand what is the Cucina brand, and to understand the real Italian food.
So I wonder if we could go a bit behind the scenes to the creation of the content. Because obviously when they're running up the restaurant, you need a team. The creation of content, you also have a team, you have an assistant. What does that look like for you? How do you figure out when to do it, what to do, who are the people helping you, the tech? What does that look like?
Okay. I mean, with Brand Talk, myself and Sam, we work very closely together. He has his ideas as well. Majority of the content, I will come out and I will share with him what I want to do. I enjoy what I'm doing. Puts a smile on my face to do the videos at home or in the restaurant. Now, I have a lot of things coming out. I'm producing my own sauces. I'm going to start a retail sector in the restaurant with obviously La Molisana and other pastas as well. But the whole Cucina brand will evolve and become bigger. I'm not just going to stop. Like I said, I just want the one restaurant, but it doesn't mean I stop there at the restaurant, because I understand the market. I understand what the customers want and what they need. And I know where the loopholes are regarding produce and sauces. So there's a lot of things to come out in 2024. 2024 is going to be hopefully our biggest year. So yeah, a lot of things to look forward to.
Sounds very exciting. Also unsurprising. You should definitely be riding this wave. I love it. I wonder, lots of people here probably run their own company, or they are thinking of running their own company. Any advice for those entrepreneurs out there before we end?
Running your own company, depending on what you want to do. Obviously, if it's a restaurant business, think 3 or 4 times first. Because the overheads are very, very high. So really plan on what you want to do. And not only do you need to believe in what you are doing, but you need to understand the market. Because I spoke to one Italian restaurant and said, I'm doing halal Italian restaurant. Huh? What are you doing? It will never work. That was the reaction that myself and my partner, we received last time. Oh, it won't work. How can you do a halal Italian? You need the wine. How are you going to make sales? I was like, no, it's going to work. You don't understand the Muslim spending power. So understanding your market is fundamental in what you are doing. They used to say that I'm too niche. I have the number one food in the world. So I was like, which niche are you talking about? Because I want to do halal. Halal or not halal? I'm still doing Italian food. And the restaurant can be 3/4 full of non-Muslim. So the food has to be good first. Halal is the bonus part. Why do Italians come to my restaurant? Because I'm giving them proper Italian food. You have to slog whatever you want to do. Get those right. If you get those parts wrong, then that's where you fail.
Speaking of doing what's right for you, do you feel at this point that you have found your why?
Yes. Yeah, I got goosebumps when you said it. Finally found my why, yes.
Was there a moment when you thought, I found it?
Yeah, it was a few weeks back. It's actually when we went viral. But I've been doing it for 1.5 years. Videos are doing well. The best one was fine. But when I went viral the second time, really the big second time, I would say, then I realized that, okay, I was meant to do this. I enjoy doing this and making people happy. I like to fulfill their needs when they come to the restaurant. Oh, chef, could you make this for me? Because this is not on the menu. I'm like, okay, yeah, I can make that for you. So doing it on a larger scale now, I finally like, okay, yeah, I found my why in my life. Why I became a cook, why I became a chef, why I went through all of those years slogging away. At the end of it, I found out my purpose. Having TikTok and Instagram now, I can share across those platforms that give me daily way to do that. At the end of the day, that's what you want. Money, how many millions do you want? You just need to be having a solid business that can pay the bills every month. Yes.
What kind of legacy do you want to leave behind?
Legacy. I want Cucina to be a real Italian halal restaurant in Singapore. And I put it forward that I was the first to bring really authentic Italian food more to the masses. Hard work and dedication can go a long way. And I hope that the Cucina brand can last forever. Share the love with other people as well. People used to ask me, chef, you share recipes with them. You're not scared that they open a restaurant and take away your business. I said, really? You really think by a few recipes that I give online that they can open a business? Give some recipes away and running a business is two very, very different things. The reason I did it is for people to cook at home. And when they feedback to me, oh, chef, I made your pesto sauce last week, or I made your soup and everybody loved it, it's enough for me.
And what do you think are the most important qualities of a successful person?
Being humble, number one. Don't let it go to your head. How big you are, there are still bigger out there. And at any time, it can be taken away from you. More people know me, so be more careful, more responsibility. But at the end of the day, be humble and just be thankful.
And where can people go to find out more about what you are doing, see all your tips on the best pasta to buy, the best cheese?
Naturally, go to my TikTok Cucina account and my IG. These two, I'm also on YouTube as well. These are my three main accounts. Obviously, coming down to Cucina, we are Kinex Mall at Basement 1. We did the major renovations, so the restaurant is very big now. I can sit over 100 people. We have private dining rooms as well. We have diversified the business more in 2023. New menus. So please help us out and check us out and come down. See me.
For sure. We will have to text you to make sure that you're actually there. Just before the final question, I had one question from my mom and she insisted I ask you. She wanted to know, what is the secret to cooking the perfect al dente pasta?
Very simple. You follow what your packet says. If the packet says al dente in 9 minutes, okay, your pasta has to be boiling water. There's salt in the water. at least a tablespoon of salt in your water. If it says 9 minutes, you put a timer on for 8 minutes, 1 minute earlier, because you want to finish cooking your pasta in the sauce. This is where people get it wrong. They don't follow the packets, or they will cook it over what it's supposed to be. But sometimes they put in the plate and then they put the sauce on top. That's not how you make pasta. You need to combine it, okay? You need to have the sound of love, what we say. The juiciness of the pasta and the sauce combine as they emulsify. This is how you make a beautiful plate of pasta. And for it to be al dente, you cook it 1 minute earlier and then you just finish it in your sauce and that's it. And then you serve and you eat, okay? And 100 grams of pasta is for one person. Raw pasta, 100 grams. Because in Italy, we weigh our pasta. Every single time when we cook pasta, we weigh it, which I think in Asia, they don't. My mother would weigh every single day. She would weigh the pasta. And like I do as well. You need to weigh the pasta because you need to understand the portion size. If you're cooking too much, then the ratio of sauce to pasta is wrong. So this is where you get big plates of pasta, soggy plates of pasta, too much sauce, too little sauce.
And one tablespoon of salt in the water.
You must put salt in the water. No oil in the water, please.
So 1 tablespoon.
Yes. Depending on how big your pot is and how much you're cooking is right. I mean, if you're cooking a lot of pasta, then 2 tablespoons. You know, it's more than 3-4 liters of water, then yeah, definitely. But no olive oil inside the water, please. Eh? I'm sure you saw my videos regarding that, right? That's a no-no. Never. It's not necessary. You're just wasting good olive oil.
So big takeaway. Less than 1 minute on the package. Salt, no olive oil.
Correct.
We should get good pasta from this interview now.
Yes, you should.
Just before I end, anything else that we haven't covered that you really feel you want to talk about?
I want to say thank you. I want to say thank you to all of my followers, the people who believe in me and follow me and DM me every day, wishing blessings on the restaurant, on the business, on myself, good health. I just want to say a huge thank you to all of them, because without them, I wouldn't be where I am now on social media. And I'm just happy to help everyone out. And I just want to say a big thank you and a lot of love from me.
And that was the end of episode 144 of the So This Mawai podcast. The show notes can be found at sothismawai.com/144. And if you've enjoyed what you've heard so far, do subscribe to the Steamy newsletter. The subscribe button can be found on the show notes. And also, if you really do like this particular episode, I would love if you would share it with your friends as well. Every single share will help immensely in helping other people to learn about this episode and also the podcast. I really hope that you enjoyed this. Don't forget to subscribe to Steamy the podcast and see you next Sunday for another episode.